Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. I'm Laura Coe, your host, and as always, thank you so much for tuning in. Today we have Daniel Geffen joining us. Daniel is the co-founder of a company called Get Featured. It helps people who want to get on podcasts and promote something. If you're interested, you can check it out, Get Featured. He is also an entrepreneur that grew multiple companies from scratch, Jet Answering Service, Jet Virtual Services, Jet Offices. This is a guy that basically in the face of adversity, he is all about getting up, making it happen, making it real. If you're an entrepreneur out there struggling along, you're not sure if you've got something, you're not sure what to do, this is a great story for you. This guy kept it real, kept it going in the face of massive adversity, turned around and made it happen. I totally love chatting with him. He's also the podcast host of Can I Pick Your Brain? I got to come on his show, and if you're interested, you can check it out. But it's all about finding people who have had some success in their life and getting to hear stories where he asks questions specifically about, you know, how they made it happen. If you're interested in finding out more information, you can find him at getfeatured.com or Daniel Geffen, GEFEN.com. Everything, as always, is on my site. If you have any questions, send me a note. Hit me up, Laura at lauraco.com. And thanks again for tuning in. Welcome to this week's episode. Today, this is actually my second hour chatting with Daniel. Hey, Daniel, how are you?
Hey, Laura. How are you?
Great. Again, Daniel and I did a back-to-back day where I went on his podcast, and now he is coming on mine. So this is just a lot of fun, and we were just laughing that maybe we need to talk every day a couple hours.
Yeah, I was just saying to Laura before the show that my wife's getting a little jealous because I think I've been speaking to you more than her today.
Seriously, you are definitely the person I've spoken to the most today. But that said, it has been a blast. It's been super fun getting to know you. And Daniel, I was thinking for today's episode, I often go back and hear the backstory to people's lives before we talk about, you know, whatever they have going on, their current work or jobs. But your backstory in particular was actually quite a surprise, I have to say. Can you take me and the listeners back through your early years where you were married young and your job and sort of the downturn of 2008 and just kind of walk us through this story? I was captivated, I have to say.
Yeah, you know, it's really funny because I get that reaction a lot and I don't really understand. Like, I think my life's pretty boring, but, you know, I guess other people think it's interesting. And the truth is that when I listen back to the show, I kind of think, it has been an interesting life so far. I mean, you know, I'm only 33 years old, but there's been quite a bit of ups and downs in the short period of time. So I guess, where should I start? Should I start when I got married, I got my first job. Should I start there?
Yeah, so you're married, right? You got married young. You were 22, is that right?
22 years old. No degree, because I basically was one of the guys in school that was the class clown because I was trying to get everybody's attention and I didn't really want to be told what to do. I don't know if anyone can relate to that. I'm sure you can.
from the episode we did earlier, I mean, I think we would have been best friends.
Yeah. So I basically stood on tables and like kind of, I don't know, got up to stupid things. And so I remember even actually I was dating a girl once and she had to break it up with me because her father said that I didn't have a degree and I wasn't going to be able to support his daughter. So he basically forced her to break up with me.
So you never finished, you were in school in London, I take it. Yeah.
Yeah, I was in school in London and I just remember one day I hadn't finished yet the semester. That's what you call it in America, right? Semester.
Uh-huh.
So I hadn't finished it yet. And I just remember one day I said to myself, do you know what? This is so boring. I don't want to go back to school and finish this off. Like there's just no point. I'm just wasting my time. And so I quit. And so I didn't go back to school. So I basically just ended up, you know, doing some odd jobs. And then I got married and an opportunity came up in California where my wife is from. And they wanted to pay me $60,000 for the job. And I kind of, I mean, for my age and the fact that I had no degree, it was like, wow, that's incredible. Mm-hmm. But my negotiation kind of itch, you know, I have this like this itch that whenever someone offers me something, I feel like I got to just try and see if I can. Well, if they're offering me 60,000, then maybe they'll offer me a bit more. So I kind of like, we went back and forth, and in the end, I ended up signing on a 6-figure salary, which is a little bit crazy.
That's more than an itch. I mean, come on, that's like a serious scratch to get from 60 to 6 figures.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very aware of my weaknesses. Like, I'm lazy as hell, but when I'm, you know, put me on a negotiation table, like, I'm there. You know what I'm saying? It's like saying to like Michael Jordan, are you ready to play basketball? Like, hell yeah, I'm ready to play basketball. Put a basketball in my hand and I will slam dunk. So it's like the same thing with me. It's like, put me in a negotiation table and I'm like, I'm slam dunking this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're like a sales guy. Like, this is like your thing.
Yeah, like,
live for the clothes.
Yeah, exactly. So I ended up on the 6-figure salary. We were living in California in this Spanish townhouse, living the life, as they say. And we had our first child. And then 2008 hit me in the head, like a big bang.
How so? You this job, right? This 6-figure job, it just disappeared?
Yeah, I got laid off. Like, they couldn't, you know, it was, you know, 2008 came along and boom, it's like suddenly no job. So I remember there was a guy in the community that I met with who was in mortgages, and that I was telling him that I got laid off and I don't know what I'm going to do. And he said to me, well, you know, you're a really good sales guy. Why don't you come work for me in mortgages? So I thought, oh, okay, that's cool. I'm like, well, you know, are people making money, like people working for you? And he's like, well, let me introduce you to one of my managers. His name is Shabir. And so I met with Shabir. Shabir was wearing this really nice Breitling watch, and I've got this thing for shiny things, you know. So I said to him, wow, Shabir, that's a really nice watch. He's like, yeah, you know, it's like, I think it was like a $20,000 Breitling watch. And I said, that's really cool. He said, well, yeah, I made $500,000 last year in commission. So, you know, I got myself a little gift. And so I saw the dollar signs light up in my eyes, and I'm just like, get me on the phone and I will close deals. Come on, if this guy made $500,000 last year. But little did I know that it was 2008 and it was just going to get worse, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I ended up spending 4 months basically straight hammering the phones. I spent about 12 hours to 15 hours a day just cold calling people and getting pretty much, like, even the people that wanted a mortgage, that they were begging me for a mortgage, we couldn't get them a mortgage in 2008. So it was like,
right, right. I mean, it basically just dried up in a minute. Did this impact, because, you know, you started by saying, put me in front of a sales moment and I'm there. Did this impact your confidence or, you know, excitement? I mean, or this, how did you respond to it? Did you want to double and triple down, or did you start wondering, am I even good at this?
No, I mean, I kind of figured that nobody else was making any sales. So I feel like if everybody else was making sales and I wasn't, then I would be like, oh my goodness, I suck at this. What's going on? But because nobody was making sales, and even the top guys who are making, you know, like the guy Shabir made $500,000 the year before, he wasn't doing deals either. So I knew it wasn't, me. I knew it was the industry and the economy.
Right, right. Okay. That's good. I mean, it was crumbling that fast that you were, because I remember it happening. It was happening over like 6 months, right? So I didn't know if it was like a slow demise and you weren't sure what was happening, but it sounds like from inside it was just hitting a wall.
It was pretty bad. I mean, I vividly remember getting a knock on the door in my Spanish townhouse, and Olga, this like Russian lady, this big Russian lady, is at my door. And I said, hello. And she goes, Mr. Geffen. I said, yeah. And she's like, you need to leave. So I said, what do you mean I need to leave? And she said, well, you haven't paid rent in 2 months and we need to evict you. And I said, well, I have a wife and a child. Like, where are we, you know, what do you mean? Where are we going to go? And she goes, not my problem. So there I was, like, pretty much on the street. Although, thankfully, my parents-in-law lived in California. So we ended up basically going to them.
That can't have been a good moment.
No, let's just say it was like someone took a knife and castrated me at that point, because it's like, Sorry for being so detailed.
No, but you're like totally flying high. You've got this great job. You've living the life. And suddenly, how long of a time was it between landing the job and 2008?
Well, it was a year. So we were flying high for a year. We were like eating out all the time and driving in a brand new car and living in a Spanish townhouse and just like really having a great time. And then boom. And the worst part about it is, for those of you listening that are married, yeah, it's not fun when you kind of have to live in your parents-in-law's house and eat off, you know, from their food, you know.
Yeah.
And it was very difficult for me because I'm the kind of guy that I want to provide. Like, I want to be in control of my life and I want to be able to provide for my wife and child. And it was scary. And yeah, I was in a really bad place.
So you decide to leave and just go take a job, any job at that point. Is that it? Was it from the discomfort in your in-laws, or how did you decide to go back to London?
We lasted 3 weeks in my in-laws' house. We were gonna get divorced, and I kid you not when I say that. Thank God now we're married 10 years. We have 4 beautiful children. We're very happy, but those were dark times and it was very difficult. And it was literally either we get divorced or we like try and make it work somewhere else, because it really wasn't working out. So I called up my dad, who, you know, I have a precarious relationship. Let's put it that way. With, you know, I hardly speak to him. I basically speak to him when either somebody gets married, has a baby, or dies.
Okay. So these are desperate times.
Yeah. So when he calls me, I'm hoping that it's one of the two and not the third option. You know, someone died. So I called my dad up, and I, you know, with my tail between my legs, I'm like, hi, dad. And by the way, my dad was so proud of me when I got that 6-figure salary. Like, he was so shocked because he didn't think I was going to get that. Like, you know, I was like a high school dropout, you know, and like, he was really proud of me. He's like, wow, my son on a 6-figure salary living the life in California, like, you know, and now a year later, I've got to make that freaking phone call to him. Oh, hi, dad. Yeah, I'm broke.
Dude, if you could see my, so for everybody out there, we record these through Skype recording, so we can't see each other. And Daniel, if you could see my face, I'm like rubbing my forehead in discomfort for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I can feel that pain. I, you know, it's just, there's a certain point when you're motivated. It sounds like you're motivated to be independent, to prove something, to like, right, make something of yourself and have that image of yourself being put back out there. You know, it's just, that's got to be painful.
Yeah. So I basically said to him, look, you know, I'm in a really bad situation. Can you help me out? And being a dad, and now I know because I'm a dad, I would do anything for my kids. So he said, listen, come to London and I'll give you a job. You know, now my dad has a grocery store, but it's like one of these like 9-11 type of stores, like very small. They just serve like, you know, the basics. And, you know, just put yourself in my shoes for a second. I was sitting in like this high rise building, looking at the Hollywood sign, you know, making good money. And now I'm being offered a job selling milk and eggs.
Okay. And I have to bust you out for a second because it's 7-Eleven. You said 9-11.
What do you mean? Did I say 9-11?
Uh-huh. The little supermarkets are 7-Eleven.
Sorry, 7-Eleven. By the way, that gives away my my British, you know.
I was going to let it pass, but it was too easy to just rib you on.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's got it. He's got this little grocery. He tells you you can come in, and the job that you get is what?
Just sitting at the cashier and serving people. Like, that's it.
Ugh. And so.
Yeah, I know. Trust me.
So you're in London. You're at the cashier. You do that for how long?
Okay. So here's the thing. Like, being an entrepreneur, I couldn't just sit and serve people. So I had all these ideas to like grow the business and create a chain of stores and like a delivery system. And like, I had all these different ideas and I started putting some of them into place. Like, I started implementing them. But the problem is that my father, who kind of didn't want anything to do with the business, he left the business in the hands of somebody else called Ahmed. And Ahmed was like in charge. And so everything I try to do, he kind of didn't let me do it. And so when I went to my father to tell him, hey, dad, I'm like trying to like grow your business. And he's just like, just sit at the cashier and do your job. Oh. And I'm just like, no freaking way. Okay. Like, no, that's not going to happen. And so after a year, I went to my wife and I said to my wife, I said, honey, if I have to serve milk and eggs to one more person, I'm going to take out a shotgun and shoot everyone and then shoot myself, because it's like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. So, yeah. And Daniel, you know, I want to say to anybody listening right now, like what you just said is really key. If you have that entrepreneurial spirit in your blood, that's such a sign, right? That you can't just do the register. You have to rethink the systems, right? Like you can't, it's like you can't stop yourself, right? Would you say that that's how you feel?
Yeah. You know, whenever someone says, Daniel, what's the definition of an entrepreneur? Like you always hear people saying, how do you define an entrepreneur? So like for me, it's very simple. An entrepreneur is someone who cannot work for anyone else, period.
Right, right. And needs to constantly be innovating, creating, taking it to the next place, right? You're always thinking about that growth and not just turning the wheel.
Yeah. So my wife said to me, look, you know, why don't you start your own business? You always have these ideas. I'm like, I'm behind you. Don't worry. You have my support. Just start your own business. So I remember that conversation with my dad again. It was like awkward because, you know, he gave me the job and now I'm quitting. But I basically said to him, you know, dad, I'm going to start my own business. So thank you. But, you know, it's not going to work out. And he was okay with it. He's like, okay. And so I ended up starting my company, my first company, which was a telephone answering service. So we would answer calls for many different companies that needed their calls answered. Like they wanted to outsource their calls. So we basically did that. And it was really difficult because at the beginning, like I was basically everything in the business. So I was the receptionist, I was a sales guy, I was the bookkeeper, I was the marketer, I was the debt collector, I was a customer service rep, right? So I like sit there and I put on different hats all day long, you know, this hat, that hat.
Yep, been there. I mean, I always say that the beginning was every single hat and then slowly just taking them off one by one. It's brutal, those first few.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess fast forward, but like pretty much I did a lot of cold calling. I got my first few clients. And then I remember the first day when I was able to hire my first member of staff. And it was like, wow, like celebration, you know, I've got my first, you know, employee. And so, you know, she came in and she started answering the calls and I was able to make sales calls and do all the other things. And then fast forward, I ended up having, you know, a bunch of staff and everything was like kind of going well. And then there was like manic, like just everything just went crazy. And that's why I realized my weakness in business is I'm not good at managing people. Mm. And I'm not good at the nitty gritty stuff. Like I like to work on the business. I like to think of how to build the business and I'm good at sales, but I'm just not good at one highlight for me, well, it's not really a highlight. It was more like a nightmare. I had this 55-year-old woman as one of the receptionists, and she must have been in like a bad mood. I don't know, something at home, but she was in a really bad mood and she took it out on a client, like, you know, on a call. And so when she got off, I gave her a mouthful because I was like, because the thing is this is my baby. Like, I built this up. I worked so hard to build this up. And when somebody doesn't care about my business like I do, I take it personal. So, and that's another lesson I learned is don't take things personal right. In business.
There's, it's not personal. When you start managing a group of people, you learn a lot of lessons quick, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And the worst part was she burst out crying. Yeah. I'm this like 25-year-old and this 55-year-old is like crying and I'm just thinking, oh my God, I don't know how to handle this. Like I'm not a therapist. And then literally I get another, you know, one of my therapists coming in saying that she's got to leave because she's got an emergency doctor's appointment for her anorexia. And I'm just thinking, oh my God, like who's going to answer the calls? Like, and then the worst thing of all was when my head receptionist, who I finally managed to like unload all of my duties to someone who was responsible. And so she became the bookkeeper. She became the customer service rep. She became the, you know, person chasing all the invoices. And she was just really good. And she also helped me hire and fire and deal with all the emotional, you know, baggage.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens? One day I get a phone call from my head receptionist who's manning the ship, right? And she goes, "Oh, hi, Daniel. I'm really sorry. I'm not going to be able to come into work." And I said, "Oh, is everything okay? Are you going to be in tomorrow? You know?"
Yeah.
She's like, "No, Daniel. I don't know how to say this, but I can't come to work ever again. I almost took my life. I'm basically suicidal, and my boyfriend broke up with me, and I went to a shrink, and so he told me I can't work for 6 months. Sorry." So,
and you know, this is such a, like, I mentor over at the University of Chicago's Entrepreneurship Center and here in Chicago. And I meet with these mentors, sorry, these entrepreneurs. This is so common. This, like, it grows suddenly. Everybody wants the growth, right? Like, you come out of the gate and all you want is to sell. And then all of a sudden you wake up and you've got a company, but this next phase of employees and, like, these situations, you couldn't dream this up, right? For $1 million, right? That could happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're not prepared for that part. I mean, that's the part that I found definitely the most challenging. The employees delegating, getting systems that work on their own. It's absolutely brutal.
Yeah. And I don't know what it was about that day, but the same day I get the landlord of the office calls me up and says that I've got 2 weeks notice because they're selling the place.
Oh my God, dude.
So there goes my head receptionist, okay? There goes my office, which means I've got to move all the equipment somewhere. I don't yet know where, but I've got 2 weeks to do it. And all of the clients that I have who are expecting their calls to be answered every single day, right? Who's going to answer their calls, like, in the interim? Like, right. How are we going to do that? And I don't have my head receptionist to even help me with that. So, like, I had basically what you would call a mini nervous breakdown where I kind of, like, just left and I went home. I, like a little boy, you know, I went into my bedroom, sat on my bed. I kind of just held my hand, head in my hands. And I was just like, you know, it's like, what the hell? Like, I'm working so hard. I'm, like, working 15 hours a freaking day. I've built this up. I finally got a business. I'm not making any freaking money because all the money goes to my staff and my overheads. And I'm so busy every day managing everybody and managing everything and putting out fires that I'm not even able to grow the damn business. So I'm not even paying myself. So I'm basically just a slave.
Yeah.
And it was enough, you know?
Nobody tells you that. Why don't people tell you that this is what entrepreneurship looks like? You know, people, I'm free and I'm going to make so much money and I won't have a job. It's like, oh, how'd that work out, right? It's like, it's just, that is not why to go into business.
Well, it's like marriage, right? Like, people think that,
yes,
you know, if someone told you what marriage was really like, it would be freaking scary. It'd be like, will you marry? Well, before you say, will you marry me? Let me just show you what it's going to look like over the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And suddenly imagine you're, like, looking at the screen and you're like, oh my God, you know, it's a lot of work.
Right. We fall in love with the idea of love, right? And in that case, we say this romantic love will last forever. And it's like, marriage is work. You know, I've been with somebody for 20 years. It's something you have to really focus on, pay attention to and nurture. And with businesses, I mean, it's just an incredible amount of labor to get them going. It's a labor of love, you know. It's I didn't love the sector I was in, but I loved entrepreneurship. But there is a false sense out there that it's, I've set my own hours and I'm free as a bird, right? It's to set up a full structure it's a process. And so how many years in were you at this point?
This was, I think I was 3 years, 2 years, 2 years in. And no, maybe it was three. It was between 2 and 3, maybe 2.5 years, between the 2 and 3 year mark. And I had a business mentor at the time, and I called him up. His name was Gavin. I'm sitting on my bed, and I've got my phone in my hand, and I'm, like, ready to cry. And Gavin's like, "Hey, Daniel, how's it going?" I'm like, "Not good." Really bad. And I just went on for about, like, 20 minutes talking about how bad it was and doom and gloom and la, la, la. And then Gavin, like, just kind of, there's this pause on the phone, and Gavin's like, Daniel? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, shut up. And I'm like, what? It was like someone literally went, whoosh, slapped me across the face.
That's He's hilarious.
Like, get off your sorry backside and go and do something about it. And I'm like, sorry? I was like still in shock. You know, well, what? He's like, you're an entrepreneur, right? You're supposed to be like, you know, really good at figuring things out, right? Building businesses. Go figure it out. Like, yeah. Stop sitting and sulking. But get up and go, you know, think of something and you'll manage. I believe in you. You'll come out of it. You'll figure a way out of this. And he hangs up the phone. So I'm sitting there in my room and I'm like, geez, Gavin, thanks, you know.
But great advice, hindsight, yeah?
Yeah. Like, listen, this changed my whole life. Like, literally, this is one of those cliches where you go, I had a transformation. This was one of those transformational moments. So I kind of got up and I said, you know what? He is right. He is right. Like, what the heck am I doing? Like, let me get out of this sourpuss mood and let me think about what can I do? Like, let me take myself out of this emotional heavy moment and just, like, imagine my brother was going, or my son was going through this. Like, what would I advise him, right? What would I advise someone that I love? And an idea came to my head, which was so crazy that I thought, no way, that's ridiculous. Like, that's not going to work. But it did. And the idea was, what if I could outsource my whole business to one of my competitors?
Yeah, that's just nuts. So,
it is nuts, right? It's like,
I mean, it's kind of like nuts in this really brilliant, crazy way, but it's nuts. Like, right. So you thought that, and did you even think to yourself at the same moment, like, what am I even talking about?
Yeah. At the same moment, I said, that's ridiculous. And then I said, good. I like ridiculous. This may just work. So I said, look, let's just see what happens. Let's try this out. So I started calling up all of my competitors and I basically said I wanted to meet with them and I wanted to interview them with the potential of outsourcing my business to them. And so I basically lined up a week of me back-to-back meeting and talking to competitors until I remember the day when I walked into one of my competitors and I the minute I walked in, I knew this was the right fit. Just the way that they ran everything and the customer service, everything was the opposite of my operation. My operation was, their operation was la, 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 la. And I thought, brilliant. Now I just need to put on my negotiation hat and grind this guy to the ground so I can get the biggest amount of margin. And so I did. And it worked out really well for both of us because, you know, he got a nice big amount of, you know, kind of business coming in and I got great margins. And so I remember that day I fired all of my staff, got rid of my office, took my laptop. Do you remember how on my show you said that you went and you bought a MacBook?
Yeah.
So similar story, right? I took a laptop. Took my laptop and my phone to a hotel. It was one of these like really nice 5-star hotels. And I drove there and I went into the hotel lobby and I opened up my laptop and it was the first day of freedom. And I basically thought, wow, now that I don't need to do anything, like what I can pretty much spend my entire day on growing the business. And that's exactly what I did every single day. And I basically went to this hotel every day for a whole year. And in fact, so it was so funny because I got people coming up to me going, excuse me, can I take my lunch now, sir? And I'm like, I don't work here. I mean, technically I do work here, but not for the hotel. I'm not the manager. You could take lunch break whenever you like. I don't really care.
Wait, did you sit in the cafe of the hotel? Like, or is the lobby? Where were you?
I moved around, so I would start off in the cafe and then I'd like kind of just, you know, sometimes go up the stairs and down the stairs and by the pool. it was fun, you know, but I was selling. I was just like literally walking around the hotel, selling away. I blew up the business. It started like scaling like crazy. And remember, like I had all of my clients. They were all my clients because even though I outsourced the business, I owned the clients. So, you know, everything else was outsourced, but my company and my brand was intact. So I remember about a year goes by and suddenly I get a tap on the shoulder and I turn around and it's the manager of the hotel. I guess they changed management because the previous manager clearly wasn't on pulse. But this new manager says, excuse me, can I have a word? And I said, sure. He said, are you a guest at the hotel? He was trying to be polite, you know. And I said, no. And he said, do you live here? And I said, no, I actually have a wife and three kids at home, but no, I don't live here. And he said, so what exactly do you, like, what are you doing here every day? I've seen you for the last 3 months every single day. And I said, well, I'm running my business. And he goes, right, do you mind running your business somewhere else?
That's why I'm asking you, because when I was writing my book, I now at the University of Chicago's B school, it has this insane atrium, but I got mm-hmm. sick of it. So I tried to go to a hotel, but you know, I can't say after the sixth hour, people seemed as friendly as that first hour. So I'm trying to figure out how you got a whole year in there.
Right. Yeah. I guess I kind of blended in, you know, I don't know.
And the lattes at the hotels were very expensive too. So,
which is why I never bought one.
Right. Because the only way to stay would be to keep purchasing stuff. So you just hung around and didn't even purchase stuff.
Yeah. I was cheap ass. What can I do?
That's amazing. I can't believe you didn't get thrown out after a month. That's hilarious. So you're kicked out of this hotel. Where do you go?
So then I just ended up working from home, which was not, you know, it was good. And then it was not good. And then I decided, nope, working from home is really not a good idea. So then I ended up renting out an office, just like a shared office space. And that was it. And then a couple of years went by, business was growing. And I decided, you know what, why am I living in England where it's rainy and cold and people are like, actually, if there's people listening to this who are British, like, what the heck are you still doing there? Like, guys, I mean, God, it's so depressing, right? So I'm just kidding. I love the Queen. England's great. But I just felt like I could live anywhere I want because my business is basically mobile, right?
Right.
So I said to my wife, like, hey, why don't we move to Israel? So she's like, okay. So we.
Okay, who is this wife of yours? Like, she's just like down for anything.
Well, she's a Californian girl, so you know how they are.
So she's off to Israel. Why Israel?
Why Israel? We're Jewish and figured that, you know, she has her grandparents there and it's a nice hot country. And we just decided to try it out. And so here we are and we're really happy here.
How long have you been there?
It's been about a year and a half now.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we love it. We're like, you know, so pretty much like it got to the point where actually my company was running smoothly. So I ended up only spending about an hour a week on the company. I ended up playing tennis and hanging out with my wife and hanging out with my kids. And then I got a bit bored of that. So someone said to me, hey, do you want to come on my podcast show? You know, it sounds like you got an interesting story. And I said, what's a podcast show? It sounds weird. What podcast? Weird name. And he's like, well, it's like a radio show, but it's online. And so I said, ooh, radio, that sounds cool. I've never done that before. Sure. So next thing I know, I've got this mic in front of my mouth and I'm like chatting away and giving over my story. And like time just flew by and I was having so much fun. And he's like, well, thank you so much for coming on the show. And I was like, that's it. It's over. Oh my God. I want more, right? So after the show, I said to him, you know, how do I start one of these podcast things? And he said to me, well, I'll teach you how. Pay me, you know, $750. He probably pulled it out of his ass, but you know, whatever he thinks, what he can get out of it. And 2 weeks later, I had my first episode. And since then, so I called the show, Can I Pick Your Brain? Because I like to pick people's brains to find out, you know, how they became successful or what they did. And since then, it's just been crazy. It's been a year and I've done about 65. Yeah, your episode 65, Laura. So 65 episodes. I was just recently rated the top 26 podcast to listen to in 2017. And I've interviewed like literally from the smartest man alive, a guy who basically hacked into NASA when he was 13 years old. I had a leading hostage negotiator, a leading FBI hostage negotiator who was a hostage negotiator for the bank robbery in Chase Bank, Manhattan Bank, which was really interesting. We talked about business negotiations, and I had Jay Abraham, the marketing legend, on my show, and just some crazy guests. And I had this crazy guest called Laura Coe. I don't know if you've heard of her. Wild woman. I mean, she built up a multi-million dollar business and sold it to like a billion dollar business, and then just decided to walk away because she's insane.
That's hilarious. Yeah, no, it's a great podcast. And for those of you out there who haven't checked it out, Can I Pick Your Brain? He's got a really, you've got a very diverse set of people that you interview as well. And it's a lot of fun, the way you style the podcast. And how long have you, so 65 episodes, so it's been just over a year, is that right?
About a year, yeah. And for some reason, I mean, the good thing about the name is it's catchy, but the problem is if you type Can I Pick Your Brain in Google, I think it's like why you should never ask someone, can I pick your brain? So it's like not great SEO for me, but my website is danielgeffen.com if for those of you that want to check it out.
Awesome. And so Daniel, everybody who comes on this podcast, I ask them a specific question. So if you don't mind, what does an authentic life mean to you?
Just for me, it means being real, being yourself, not really caring too much about what everybody thinks. I think the best line I ever heard was actually from a guest of mine called John Vroman, who is the founder of a charity, an amazing charity called the Front Row Foundation. And he said, and I'll try and remember the line. Here we go. Ready? Great. I just went blank. Look at that. The line is...
I hate that.
Yeah. It's not what you think, not what you think of me. No, here it is. Ready? What you think of me has nothing to do with me.
Right. That's awesome. I love that. That's right. People's narrative of you is not really about you.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just people think that they've got to impress everybody, but actually here's the thing. It's like the complete opposite. The people that you respect the most are the people that respect themselves the most.
Oh, I love that. And so do you have any practices, habits, daily rituals that you could share with the audience that keeps you on track? I mean, you're somebody who is obviously insanely tenacious, right? Like there is a persistence and a ability to get back up and keep fighting. And a lot of people, I think with entrepreneurship in particular, anything creative, it's very discouraging. Any like ideas you could share with the audience of how to keep yourself in a place that allows you to persevere?
In terms of perseverance, you know what it is? It's really keeping in mind that I ask myself the question, like, what's the worst that can happen, right? So if I send an email out to Tony Robbins and I ask him to come on my show, the worst thing that's going to happen is he doesn't reply. Like, that's it. Nothing's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
So if you don't ask, you don't get. Like, that's just something that I keep in my head all the time. If you don't ask, you don't get. If you don't try, you know, you'll never know.
Yeah.
And it's like just repeating thoughts like that in your mind. And here's another thing as well, is that the more you take action, the more results you get. The more results you get, the more confidence you get, the more you take more action, and the whole cycle continues.
I love it. Daniel, if people are looking to find out more about you, it's, you mentioned it before, but Daniel Geffen, G-E-F-E-N, is that right?
Yeah, it's one F, danielgeffen.com. And also, if anybody is interested in getting on podcast shows as well, I started a company recently. It's my new baby called getfeatured.com. And for your listeners, Laura, we're actually offering a 50%. Yes, that's 50, not 15, but 50% on our packages, which is insane, but there you go.
That's awesome. I might have to take you up on that. We need to talk. Thank you, Daniel. It's been an outstanding day chatting with you for 2 hours. It's been great getting to know you. And thank you so much for sharing your story with our listeners.
Likewise. Thank you so much. And also, if your listeners want to reach me or get in touch with me, I'm always, always, always happy to hear from you guys. So don't be shy. And if there's one thing you take from this conversation, it's like, hey, here's a test, right? Send me an email and don't be afraid to send the email because I will respond. So my email is daniel@getfeatured.com. That's daniel@getfeatured.com. And just say hi or just say whatever you want and I'll respond.
Awesome. Thank you, Daniel.